look at the graying of our culture here in America and you wonder, where will the new babies come from? They'll definitely come from the immigrant population that's here, I believe.
And it's not just the graying of America. It's the fact that men are just trying to keep the hair on their heads, let alone gray hair. We just want to have hair, period, whatever the hell color it is, you know? You know, it's so unfair how men got the short end of that stick, ladies, you know? You all keep your hair. You look absolutely gorgeous at 80. You know, you've got beautiful hair and everything else. And we look like old bald bitches at that age, you know? I mean, really, though. Admit it, ladies. We look pretty horrific.
Well, we ride you pretty hard, too.
There's the truth. You know. Finally, the truth. Finally, we got some truth on this show. There it is, Andrea. Take that and run with it, will you, please?
Well, I just want to back up for just a moment. And I thought she was going to go somewhere else with the riding comment. But I actually love and appreciate a bald man. So I don't think that, you know, premature balding in a man is a bad thing. If he shaves it and looks good,
Hold on. I got to interrupt now. What you just said is very important. When he shaves what? His head, you mean? Or... Okay, all right. Well, let's stay on that a moment. Talking about the top of the body. He's going to shave his hair. Okay, now when he does that, I wasn't being kinky. I was being honest. Here we go. But when he does that, I don't disagree with you specifically if he is shaving his head intentionally or he goes bald and it's intentional. But what I don't like is when half of their head is bald and half of their head has hair and they do that wide fashion comb over that looks somewhat like they went through an elevator, a windblown elevator, and they crashed, you know?
Well, the big question on everyone's mind, it's a gender thing, or is it? World peace, religion, sex, money, politics, climate change, big business, big ideas, and big egos. Nothing is off limits. As I'm joined by some of the most accomplished and highly opinionated women from the far left, the far right, and the far reaches of the planet. This is Malcolm Out Loud, and you're listening to Life, Liberty, and the Pursuit of Pleasure.
Well, this artificial intelligence business is starting to scare the hell out of me, and I've been following this now for the past few years, and, you know, it's kind of one of those things that it's sort of like, it almost feels like it crept up on you. Like about, I don't know, 10 years ago, I never even fathomed this stuff. Well, it was in the sci-fi movies, of course, but I never really thought, like, this would be something we'd be, like, really thinking about or, like, on the verge of, maybe. And it's mind-blowing what's going on out here with artificial intelligence and robots. I mean, you're only hearing the tip of the iceberg here when you talk about drones and you talk about, like, them delivering your pizza and stuff, or you talk about driverless cars. And, you know, this is nothing, kids. I mean, this is nothing. I mean, we're going to have a pretty heavy conversation here about robots this afternoon. If you don't know much about them, you'll probably know when we're done with this show, because we've been studying this a lot. And then what happened is Ava Armstrong, my co-host over here, she sends me this article. I think she tried to scare the hell out of me, actually, but she didn't realize I was already up on it, as I was just telling you, Ava. And you sent me an article, which is like, the headline is a mind of its own. Humanity is already losing control of artificial intelligence, and it could spell disaster for our species, warn experts. And it's a pretty big eye-opener. So what did you think, Ava, when you jumped into this thing? What were your thoughts?
Well, that article actually seemed to be a little bit of an alert. So I just ended up not believing, I don't believe every article that I read. It depends on the research. So I also looked at some other articles as well to try to give myself more balance. It was scary to read that. I think things have progressed much more rapidly than many of us had assumed it would. I remember writing a paper in college about artificial intelligence, and people kind of laughed at it when I gave the paper. it seemed like something, like you said, out of a sci-fi movie, but it's here. It's already being utilized by a company called Foxconn. They're a key manufacturing partner for Apple, Google, and Amazon. And they've already replaced 60,000 workers in that company with robots. So,
wow, 60,000, Ava, huh?
Mm-hmm. It's already here. It's already being utilized. Actually, China, as you probably know, Malcolm, is on the cutting edge of this. They're really way ahead of the United States as far as working on robotics.
They're investing heavily.
Yeah.
By the way, Foxconn is owned by aliens off the planet Mars, by the way, just so you're aware of that. And also on the other side of the world joining us today is Dr. Andrea Pennington. And I thought I'd surprise you first and just introduce you to Ava. But Andrea, good to have you here today with us as well. And
always a pleasure.
Yeah. So we've had some awesome shows. I hope you've had a chance to listen to them, but they're pretty pretty good stuff here. So we're rocking and rolling here for sure. But all right, so this AI business. Hey, before we, I know the producer sent you the article, Andrea, to look at. Had you really looked into this world before we talked about doing this particular focused show today on this? Had you really dove much into it prior to now?
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, as a just recently, one of my friends and clients, Phil Lewis from Corporate Punk in London, he and I were talking about this last year, and he just released a book a few weeks ago called Creativity as Power. And the first chapter of this book is called iRobot. And he goes in depth looking at, you know, what people are now calling the fourth industrial revolution. And, you know, to Ava's point about the number of jobs that people are losing to machines is something that he talks about. But what was really cool about seeing this book that he wrote, Creativity as Power, which isn't mentioned in this article that you sent us, Ava, the thing is that in the article, they're saying that, you know, the things that that we humans can do that computers can't is that we can learn from our surroundings. Whereas Phil Lewis makes the point that there are two other areas that we humans do that robots cannot, and those are caring and creativity. And so the shift is happening already in corporations, not just displacing workers, but it's putting a drive and an impetus on us to really focus on our innate skill of creativity. So even though it's scary that, yes, you have tens of thousands of workers being displaced, just like it happened in the first industrial revolution, we will have to adapt.
Well, creativity is sort of subject as well. I mean, I get that as a creative guy and a visionary. I totally get that, Andrea. But it's sort of you know, subject to your, well, to your imagination. But here's the thing, you know. One thing, the robots, maybe they're not creative or have vision, maybe, but you know what they are, though? I get the feeling they're devious. You know those sci-fi movies? You know what I'm saying? I mean, that scares me. I mean, I think they've probably got a brain, a machine brain, of course, for being devious. Like, but here's the thing that scares me. It probably scares you too as well. When you read these articles, it's not just that one, but the other article that was linked to this one is another one. Well, first of all, in the first one you sent, Stephen Hawking comes out and he says that he believes that, you know, this is the end of mankind. That could end, you know, mankind is what he says. But then in the article that it's linked to, another one comes out, Sir Martin Rees, if you might have seen that. I believe he's from the UK. Sure he is. And he's predicted that machine life will, not maybe, not could, not suspect, will replace humanity and reign for billions of years beyond our time on Earth.
I think that's taking it a little bit far.
Well, that's what your future ancestors will say when they laugh back at what you said today, Andrea. When they play this tape back and say, we know what Andrea Pennington said. And these are your future ancestors saying that. They're going to be robotic, you know.
Well, it does bring to mind science fiction. And the question is, can artificial intelligence, can a robot start to think creatively? Can it create its own programs so as to displace or destroy humans? I mean, normally we think of, you know, if we think logically, most of the programmers are going to put some sort of a fail-safe in there that says that, you know, it would be against the quote-unquote robotic law to injure or harm a human.
That's going to be a robotic law, you say? Some sort of robotic law?
Yeah, I mean, that's always been postulated, you know, way back when Asimov, you know, Isaac Asimov wrote that book and included the three laws of robotics. And the first law of robotics is a robot may not injure a human being, or through inaction, it cannot allow a human being to come to harm.
Well, that's if they follow the book of ethics, that is what you're suggesting. Ava, you mentioned right away one of the big points here about jobs. And that's one of the things that, if I remember right, some of this actually can't, and I'm trying to pin it down and I don't quite remember, Ava, but I think this kind of came into the last general election of the campaign about jobs, because jobs were one of the big focuses of the campaign. And it came in regards to jobs and then job loss with the robots taking over more jobs, which I've been reading about now for some years. That this is like it's on our doorstep right now, as you say, Ava. It's not just, you know, in the future. We're already on the cusp here. We're already in this movement of robotic life happening, even more than we think, huh?
Oh, very much so. Bill Gates is already planning to tax robots that are replacing humans in the workplace.
Oh, I've seen that.
So,
yeah. Seen that. Did you see that? Yeah, he's looking at. He was serious about that too, Ava.
Yes.
I forget what he wanted to do. He wanted to what he said is, if I remember right, now you probably looked at it more recently than I, but I remember seeing that story because I follow a lot of the Bill Gates stuff. I kind of like the kind of work he does around the world. I think he's a very interesting fellow. Mm-hmm. And but he came out and said, listen, if robots are going to replace X amount of people and X amount of people pay this much in taxes, then robots have to pay this much in taxes. Isn't that kind of what he said, Ava?
Mm-hmm. Yes, exactly. He's trying to keep the structure in place, I think, for, you know, government to function. Think about this for a minute. I mean, if you don't have all these people earning, you know, what would the government do?
Well, exactly, because it assumes that if we're going to have all these workers, these low to medium stage workers replaced by machines, then we might be ushering in, you know, what Phil Lewis was referring to as the new communism. It's this fully automated luxury communism, wherein if all the tasks are suddenly taken up by robots and machines, then the rest of us, or the rest of the low skilled worker, what do they do? That means that they would have to have a guaranteed minimum income and housing provided by a taxpayer. And the owners of those machines, you know, if Bill Gates had his way, if there was this taxation, that means that this machine-produced wealth has to be shared. And that's the thing that Stephen Hawking was talking about just a few years ago. He was saying that this could be the end of, you know, our comfortable civilization as we know it, unless there is a wealth redistribution. But are these big companies that own these robots, are they going to be willing to do that or not?
Sounds like a liberal dream in the sky. Yeah. It sounds like this is like their heaven. I mean, tell me about this, please.
Nirvana for liberals. Yes.
Nirvana for liberals. That could be their whole motto there. Yeah, Ava?
I don't see it happening in a capitalist environment that we're in. It may happen like in China. They may share the money there. I don't know. China's becoming more and more capitalist as well in their model. So the thing that jumped out at me as I read each different article, each one of them referenced the year 2025, which we're only 8 years away from.
Really?
It sounds far away, but it isn't.
Isn't there a song, Ava, excuse me, isn't there a song that goes in the year 20, oh no, 2525, okay, not 2025. I think it's 2525, isn't it?
I do remember that song.
In the year 2525, go ahead, as you were.
That's an oldie. We will hit singularity, and Dr. Pennington may know what this means. I didn't know what it meant, so I had to read further. But that's the point. Singularity is when the machines are actually smarter than human beings. So we're 8 years away from that right now. So we should really be laying the groundwork, I think, for the things that you brought up earlier, like ethics and, you know, code of conduct and, you know, what we program into these things versus, you know, just letting people do it willy-nilly here.
And by the way, 2025, Ava, will be the first woman president we have. That's when she'll be taking office, by the way, is that year. Trump would have just been finishing his eighth year in office, and there will be the first woman president will be right then.
It'll be Ivanka.
Ivanka, yeah. I was going to say it'll be a strong conservative, I hope, for less government motto. But again, it's kind of cool today because we've got both sides of the aisle here. Because Andre, as much as we love Andre, you're more liberal thinking, which is interesting for your viewpoint and stuff, which I so enjoy your interaction on things. And Ava, of course, is, you know, she's a gun-toting, you know, conservative and then some. And she, you know, so you guys are on opposite side. But it's, you know what I like about this show, though? There's so much, what I do find very interesting about this, these conversations we're having, is there are so many things, Andrea and Ava, that connect us as such. I think we're defying the odds that conservatives and liberals can't work together in harmony and do cool things because we're doing that on this show. We're like we're like a science experiment. You know what I mean?
Sure.
For Washington.
Yes. We're the Star Chamber.
The Star Chamber. That's exactly. That's who we are, Ava. Go ahead. Finish your point, Ava. You were saying something ridiculous. What was it?
Well, I think, you know, we need to have some kind of, I don't know, guidelines or something in place so that builders and programmers would make sure that they didn't do more harm than good to society overall. And the other piece to this, too, which we haven't really delved into at all, is utilizing robotics in a military way. And that's really fascinating to me, being a thrower.
And scary.
Yes,
and very scary.
Very scary, it is. But drones have already started in that aspect. So,
but think
really
about that. Why aren't we doing that already, Ava, Andrea? Think about that a moment. We send our men and our women into battle. They lose arms, they lose legs, limbs, they get killed. I mean, the loss of life is horrific. But why haven't we tapped into that already where we can send these cats into battle, I wonder, since they don't evidently have feelings, as you say, Andrea, and emotional value somehow.
But it is happening. It is happening. At least the flying ones that can drop bombs. The thing that scares me about that is, as soon as we are sitting behind a screen, or you've got these military cats in, you know, Virginia, just pushing buttons, when you are so far removed from that battlefield, and I'm not saying I want people at war at all. I mean, but when we start to just look at this like a game, like a computer game, where you push a button and it magically goes and bombs someone, we are forgetting that these are real humans. And I think it makes it an automatic knee-jerk reaction to just launch missiles and launch bombs. To me, it scares me. I'm not saying that, you know, the alternative is better, but I think what we are risking by leaning so heavily on artificial intelligence is we're taking the humanity out of the interactions that could lead to peace.
Well, interestingly put there, but I you know, I'm wondering now at this point, who is, because there's a lot going on in this robot world that we're not aware of right now. Like, okay, so what I visualize is there's big factories out in like these desert remote areas. And there's like guys running them that only have like one eye. One eye is missing, you understand? And he has like, he's got one eye missing. He's got just one eye. And he's got one of those spectacles they have on the eye. He looks like a professor. They're brilliant. They're brilliant, you know? And he walks in. He's a crotchety old looking little bastard. You know what I'm saying? These kind of guys, you know? And he walks in and they have these big plants. And they're building these robots over to take over the world or something. And that's what I think is happening. I don't know who's running the program. Maybe Barack Obama's running this program. What do you think? Is that possible? Or is it Bill Gates or Donald Trump or somebody? Or maybe it's Kim Jong-un.
They've all contributed to it, though.
In what way?
Yeah, well, you know, Bill Gates, for example, in technology, mm-hmm. you know, in the world of technology, you know, and many of these giants that we have in our capitalistic society. Mm-hmm. Also, the Chinese have been very inventive. The Japanese have been incredibly inventive in this field as well. So, and also Israel is. And again, they're utilizing.
Israel definitely is. Definitely mm-hmm. is. Yeah, they're far advanced in a lot of technology things. A lot of people don't even realize how advanced Israel is. And they're amazing to me. I love the folks in Israel. They're so brilliant. When I was out there last, it's like candy. And it's such a cosmopolitan life in Israel. It's such an amazing place in the middle of that desert out there, you know? It's really reason why they call them God's people. And yes. Where this comes from. But it is amazing what's going on with this whole robotic thing. And you know, there's more and more to all of this. One of the things I've been reading, of course, and I'm sure you have, Andre, as well, is that a lot of people are starting to use the robotics to have relationships with. I mean, they're literally having, you knew we were going to go there, young lady. So, but this is not just a theory now. And I'm not talking about an electronic vibrator here. I'm talking about a full throttle, you know, relationship with a machine. You know what I'm saying? You know?
Oh, yeah.
And they're out there. And now what I'm seeing, and Ava, I don't know if you read these articles, if how far you went into the reading, but but they talk about the fact that this is like more people are going to have intimate relationships, or as some people call it, sloppy sex, with machines and not with another human being, which I just can't even wrap my arms around, because, you know, I'm sort of an intimate fellow that loves to, you know, see physically and beautiful things right in front of me. So on that note, we're going to take a quick pause with Andrea and Ava. This will get real hot when we come back, I think. So stay right there. We are excited indeed to be celebrating our one-year anniversary here at America Out Loud. And we could not have done it without you. Well, in short order, we've become one of the fastest-growing podcast and talk radio networks in the world. For all the latest news, entertainment, your blogging, and now web TV, as we celebrate our one-year anniversary here, and we'll see you back at AmericaOutLoud.com. Well, I'm not sure why we take our health for granted, but I know that many of us do, include me in that company. Recently, I had a couple of health scares that got my attention real quick. I started a new product called Healthy Cell. I took it for about 3 weeks, and man, I started to feel really good. I found myself sleeping better at night, had more energy in the day, and less stress and anxieties, and just feeling better overall. Well, with those kind of results, I knew I had to do something, so I reached to the company directly with a request to bring Healthy Cell back to America Out Loud, and here it is. Well, typically you'd pay $110 plus shipping and handling. Well, now you get it for just $79.99 for the monthly plan, plus free shipping. That's right, they'll pick up the shipping, and you pay just $79.99. Use the code OUTLOUD on HealthyCell.com, or just click the banner on the front page of AmericaOutLoud.com. It's so hard to think of how this is going to happen and how people are going to have relationships back. You know, it's hard to wrap your mind around all this. Anyways, you're here today again with Malcolm Out Loud, and we're here with Ava Armstrong from the Northeast and Dr. Andrea Pennington from Monaco. And I always have to think when I say your first name, because it's Andrea or Andrea. I probably pronounce it five different ways, Andrea, but that's me. That's me, my...
As long as you don't call me Andrea, we're all good.
Oh, dear. No, that hadn't come to my mind. But I have a whole... People always ask me every day what country I'm from or what planet I'm from. Of course, when they find I'm from Pluto, then they totally understand. But you know, I have this vocabulary and this pronunciation that really is beyond this world, which is why people always say, where the hell do you come from, fellow? We just can't put a point on your pronunciations and your things. And I said, God help you. If you figure it out, let me know, because I can't either.
You are from a totally different frequency. But speaking of other countries, you know, the interesting thing, a good friend of mine sent me a link to a documentary that aired here in France a few weeks ago. And she said, hey, I think you found a new country to go work in. This was just after I published the book, The Orgasm Prescription for Women. And the crazy thing, Malcolm and Ava, is that these people were in Japan, and there is an entire generation who do not know how to date. They do not know how to be in relationships. So for these young men, for example, who have been so obsessed with manga, virtual reality, and video games, they literally have to be trained on how to interact with humans. And to your point earlier, they are just having intimate relationships with virtual reality stars and not with actual human beings. And this is the first time that people in Japan are actually worried that there won't be enough babies born in the coming decades.
I just watched something on YouTube about that this morning.
Crazy, right?
Yes, one of these articles linked to the YouTube video, and I thought, I'll take a look at this. The article, like you said, was very, you know, very sad in its ending, because it would end up being that people would not be making babies, and, you know, making the next generation. And I watched this YouTube video, and I'm telling you, I could not believe it. I mean, it was just mind-boggling. Yes, people do not interact with people anymore.
Right.
And that's crazy. The thing. It's crazy. It really is.
Well, they're especially going as far as saying, actually, that video you're speaking about, ladies, they go as far as saying this. They say that within the next generation in Japan, how dramatic is it that we're talking about? It's this dramatic, friends. The population in Japan will lessen by half. By half. Half. Yeah. So 50% of Japan will dissipate, will go away. Right here, right now, right like this moment at the doorstep. And when you watch the video, and by the way, depending when you hear this, if you go to AmericaOutloud.com at some point after you hear this on talk radio, 2 days after every show when you hear it on talk radio is on the podcast network, both, okay? But when you do that, you'll find I'm going to put the link to that video that Ava and Andrea just spoke about a moment ago in there. And I got to tell you, it's a fascinating video in the way that it's really sad. Because what they're doing is, it's as the video goes on, you kind of keep thinking like it's going to get, you know, like real sexual in nature, or something's going to happen, some sort of exploitation. And it never happens, because what they're doing is...
No, it's really a letdown. It's a huge letdown. Because I kept thinking, you know, they're going to show something stimulating.
Exactly. I was ready for some, like, I was ready for some cool porn or something I thought was coming on there, man. But nothing ever happened.
It was so boring.
Ava, you sent me a really dud YouTube video, because... All it did, and what they're doing is, the young men and the young women, they meet in these clubs and in these fancy places, and they just sit and talk, and they drink, and they amuse each other, but they never have sex, they never have relationships, no. And so nobody's having babies out there, and nobody even cares, so they're interviewing these people.
What I thought was really weird, there are entire, like, companies that have built into this.
Yes.
Or, you know, I'm sure Dr. Pennington can explain that, but I mean, it was amazing that, like, these little, like, services that they had that the clubbing. Yes, that was very interesting.
You know what I think is sad, though, is when you look historically, there were such beautiful Japanese art celebrating the art of sensuality and sexuality. Like, there was a whole culture around, you know, good sex. Right. And now people don't even know how to do it. You know, to your point, Ava, about some of these clubs, like, there are services and clubs trying to introduce people and then teaching them, you know, the stuff that you should come naturally. It's like, okay, now it's okay to reach out and touch her hand. And now it's okay to ask for another date. And
act like they're 4 years old.
I know.
That's what just blew me away. I guess it was the lack of sophistication, really.
Yeah. And then when you see these young men saying, you know, it's just too scary, it's just too intimidating. Yes. I would just rather be in my virtual reality, use my video games, and have a relationship with someone who can never talk back. There's no risk of getting embarrassed. There's no risk that she's going to, you know, leave me for somebody else. And so they're not developing a whole side of their social skills.
Exactly.
Well, it's not just the young men saying that, Andrea. It's the young women saying that. It's both, you know. It's both. They're both young men and young women. They're saying the same thing, you know.
I don't know. I think women are very much desiring a man. I think that still is a...
In Japan, you mean? Are you talking about Japan? Or are you speaking of yourself?
well, I'm thinking of America, but I'm also thinking of other cultures as well. I think in Japan, they're freer now than they ever were, of course. And in other countries, too, in China and India and so forth, things are freeing up a bit. More of a Western influence, I think. I think, you know, women are more outspoken, you know.
We're outspoken. And, you know, part of that being outspoken is it's a biological thing. Now, I don't want to get too sciencey on you, but there is a phenomenon known as baby hunger. And so for a woman, when she gets to a mature age and her hormones change, even if the culture is somewhat built against it, when her hormones and that drive to procreate kicks in, she's not going to choose virtual reality or some video game or even just a vibrator. Mm-hmm. That innate physiologic need to reproduce kicks in. So what I was saying, Malcolm, is in that Japanese documentary, the women were more willing to get over their fear so that they could find a man, whereas a man was thinking like, what do I need it for? I don't need a baby. I mean, I don't need a wife. I don't need to have something that's going to saddle me with all this commitment. Whereas a woman had a completely different mindset.
The men are paying just to have conversation with the women, and then they go into these little booths and they just sit and they talk to them, and or they treat them, they clean their ears. Did you see that on the video? They clean their ears, or they do really kinky stuff, but they never have sex or no relationships. Which okay, right, whatever. But then also, Andre, what you're saying now with the women, they have the same clubs for women, and yes, the women go and they pay. And they pay to have that sort of... It's the same thing, Ava. Did you see that, Ava?
Yeah, I did.
And it's the same... So it's both... Amazing. I'm seeing both men and women. So here's my point. You know what just dawned on me a moment ago here? And then the whole documentary, the whole point of this is that, you know, the population in Japan, which Japan's in a lot of trouble economically as a first-rate country. And it's sad because Japan is a really remarkable place. And the people, Japanese people, are remarkable people who've done really very interesting things. And I think you would agree with me both, Andrea and Ava, on that statement.
Yep.
It's an amazing culture and amazing people and some of the hardworking people. And they're brilliant. And yet now they're talking. And this isn't just hearsay, what I'm sharing with you today. They're talking about the population of Japan for real, going to half of what it is in the next generation. That is wild. That is so significant. That's, if there's anything you learned from today, that would be the big takeaway from today. That just changes everything in Asia on a big level. So why countries like India and the Koreas and China and Indonesia, why they're mass populating and they don't have room to put the people and they're building high rises, Japan is doing directly the opposite. And it's a whole cultural thing there in Japan where, like you say, these young men and young women. So it dawned on me a moment ago as you guys were going back and forth as I was, you know, listening to you. That what do these people have for, you know, well, Dr. Andrea Pennington, this is your up your alley as a sex educator and the things that you help people with, you know, these stereotypes and relationships and other things. But, you know, what do they do for that intimacy in their life and that relationship? I mean, you simply can't get that from, you know, you're not going to get that from masturbation, and you're certainly not going to get that with a machine. So what does that say about the whole culture? I mean, that's like, it sounds like... I don't even...
It sounds empty, and it sounds like they will be emotionally stunted. Mm. Because we know that when you don't have intimate contact, we know that what happens just to babies, for example, when they don't have direct eye contact and touch, the mirroring that goes on between a mother or a father and their young and amongst siblings, that creates a whole network of neurons in our brains. And so if you're missing out on real life human contact and mirroring and interaction, you will not only be emotionally stunted, but I believe your brain development will also suffer. So guess what that leaves me to wonder? If the population in Japan is likely to be halved because people are opting for a virtual boyfriend or girlfriend, then who is reproducing, and what is going to be the rise of those kind of humans that are left?
Yeah, that's the problem in America right now. We're aborting so many fetuses.
It's true.
And every 7 seconds, there's a person that turns 55 in America. Every 7 seconds. So when you look at the graying of our culture here in America and you wonder, where will the new babies come from? They'll definitely come from the immigrant population that's here, I believe.
And it's not just the grain of America. It's the fact that men are just trying to keep the hair on their heads, let alone gray hair. We just want to have hair, period, whatever the hell color it is, you know? You know, it's so unfair how men got the short end of that stick, ladies, you know? You all keep your hair. You look absolutely gorgeous at 80. You know, you've got beautiful hair and everything else. And we look like old bald bitches at that age, you know? I mean, really, though, admit it, ladies, we look pretty horrific.
Well, we ride you pretty hard, too.
That's the truth. You know. Finally, the truth. Finally, we got some truth on this show. There it is, Andrea. Take that and run with it, will you please?
Well, I just want to back up for just a moment. And I thought she was going to go somewhere else with the riding comment. But I actually love and appreciate a bald man. So I don't think that, you know, premature balding in a man is a bad thing. If he shaves it and looks good,
hold on. I got into up now, what you just said is very important. When he shaves what? His head, you mean? Or okay, all right. Well, let's stay on that a moment.
Talking about
the top of the body, he's going to shave his hair. Okay, now when he does that, I wasn't being kinky. I was being honest. Here we go. But when he does that, I don't disagree with you specifically if he is shaving his head intentionally or he goes bald and it's intentional. But what I don't like is when half of their head is bald and half of their head has hair and they do that wide fashion comb over that looks somewhat like they went through an elevator, a windblown elevator, and they crashed, you know?
Precisely. That's why I'm saying he needs to shave it. If you're balding, just accept it. You know, it's
Amen.
Genetics. Get
Amen.
Over it. If you're not going to do some weird hair plug, hair transplantation thing, then just shave it, honey, and just wear
well,
it
those
with pride.
Are very successful now, you know.
That's
true. Elton John proved that. So men can have hair. Of course, Elton John proved a lot of things, but let's not get into that program. But
my husband shaves his head, and he looks great.
See? He's bald, too? He's got a shaven head?
He has really, you know, he lost his hair early and he just shaved it. And when I met him in a gym and I thought he was a Navy SEAL.
Met him in a gym and you thought he was a Navy SEAL. And let me guess, and the first time you met him, I mean, you were behaving yourself. You didn't have sex in the gym there, I hope, right?
Oh, no. Oh, God. It took him 8 months to get a date with me.
Oh, so. Cool. He was intimidated by you, right?
He was.
Yeah, you are. I knew you were intimidatable. Both of you women are. I knew it. We're on with two intellectually, amazingly beautiful, inside and out women today, if you didn't know that, folks. So I can see where a lot of men would be intimidated. Let's talk about that intimidation versus the robots that we're on. We'll stay on the robotic theme, yeah. But why is it that women intimidate men? Exactly.
My husband said, when I walked into that gym, I looked like I wanted to kill someone. And I had no idea that I looked like that. I had that expression on my face. What it was, I was coming out of a corporate job, you know, at the end of the day. And yeah, I probably did want to kill someone. So going to the gym was good, you know.
So you were intense, huh?
Very. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that's part of it. I think the intensity of a strong woman, and especially more of us who are entrepreneurs or we're coming from a corporate environment, we have, you know, forced ourselves to kind of woman up and take on a little bit more masculine energy. And so we do come across as very intense. And I think I don't have all of the answers, but what I've heard and seen in my own life is some men are intimidated by our intensity. Because it's like, whoa, you know, who knows how she's going to wield her power.
See, I'm directly the opposite, I guess, than most. But you probably already know that, Andrea, from the previous time that we've talked. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I so appreciate strong women. In fact, I hate weaklings who just, you know, get meek and mild and, you know, run out of the room. We got major job losses coming, so we're going to have to reinvent ourselves for a new world order. And I'm not joking you here. And I'm talking about all service-level jobs are going to be replaced. And that just, you know, that's going to be a whole nother problem for minimum wage situation and, you know, jobs in general.
I've got that covered, though. I've got that covered.
Well, I'm going to have you come back in a moment and tell us how you got that covered. But that's going to be a problem. And you see what I'm drawing out here. And now you've got this whole sexual revolution going on or not. And then where's the intimacy of all that? And what happened to just on a good old Friday night in a drive-in theater and having sex in the back seat of the car? I mean, where are those days?
Oh, now you're talking.
I die for those days again. The drive-in theater with sex in the back of the car. I mean, that was like the highest of highs. And we'll be back with Andrea and Ava in just a moment.
Welcome back to Life, Liberty, and the Pursuit of Pleasure and Passion. Today, you have me, Ava Armstrong, and I'm an author. And we have Dr. Andrea Pennington, and we have Malcolm. And we're discussing robotics in the future in America.
And in Japan.
And in Japan. All over the world,
actually. Yeah, we may not be the same world ahead as what we said, Ava.
Yes, true. We will have jobs of the future, and that's where we were heading, I think, with the discussion. And I think...
Which is robotic pimps, right?
Exactly. It will be virtual reality will be king. Personalized entertainment.
We were also talking about romance at the drive-in theater in the back seat, Ava. Don't lose sight of that.
Well, see, now they would have a virtual reality person design a robot.
That was the movie AI, where I actually appreciated it because the robot who was the gigolo was played by the actor Jude Law. And I thought, I never would have considered a gigolo, but this artificial intelligence thing, this robot gigolo, there's no risk of pregnancy, no risk of sexually transmitted infection, no risk of premature ejaculation. It's not a bad deal.
With the robot? Shame on you. Shame on you. It's a sex educator and a physical. That's not even true. Does anybody buy that out there with Dr. Andrea Pennington? I don't think so.
I like the guy that's sweaty and smelly and, he smells like a guy,
Oh, yeah. You're all into the pheromones.
Amen. Huh? And stop there a moment. I want to touch that. Ava, thank you for saying that. And you just made me feel good and defended me, because the other day there was a woman right near me and I had my armpit up and she smelled my armpit and she said, I smell your armpit. And I said, oh, is it okay? She said, I don't know. She said, it smells a little nasty. I said, get the hell out of here, I said.
Oh, my gosh.
I know. I don't think she appreciated what a good man's armpit should smell like by 3 o'clock in the afternoon. What the hell's wrong with that? There's nothing wrong with that.
But you also have to remember, bringing it back to the science, we are attracted to the pheromones of people who are a good biological match, meaning good, reproductive matches for us. And so if she wasn't attracted to your scent, it just means that you guys weren't meant for procreation.
Creation thing ever really goes away, to be honest with you.
Why?
I don't think so. Because, I still have, thoughts and feelings and stirrings and, moments where, I still think about those things. And
you slap 40. Yourself and then wake up?
Yeah. I'm a middle-aged woman, with wrinkles and, I'm not having more children. So
you're the most beautiful looking middle-aged woman with wrinkles that I know, Ava Armstrong.
Gorgeous.
I use a lot of moisturizer too, but
we all have to if we're going to stay young. And you guys out there need to try it too, man. They got men's products out there that are good, right, ladies?
Stay out of the sun.
Well, hold on. Now you say that. I understand in studying what you just said that actually a little bit of vitamin D in the sun is good for you, just not too much.
It is.
Okay.
It is good. Right. Yeah, and you can get it on your body, but not your face. You don't want to get it on your face.
The sun or the face, or you're talking semen from the robot. Which one do you
see? Stop it, Malcolm.
Right, so how do we, and on a somewhat quasi more serious note, there are two big questions we have to answer this afternoon. And I'm speaking for all you out there, so I have your back. I want you to know that. But there's two things they want to know from Andrea Neighbor, and they are basically the job part of it. How do we prepare socially, economically, in a real conversation here?
Yeah.
How do we prepare for this future right now when we know full well? Now, listen, if you are doubting out there, that there's any mistake to what we're talking about, I assure you, Ava and Andrea will correct that, the record right now on that, because they've researched this and they know we are on the verge of a robot generation happening, AI. And I know some of you can't fathom that. I get that, because I couldn't fathom it. So I'm like you. I couldn't fathom it either till I've studied. And by the way, if you go to AmericaOutloud.com, I don't want to forget to tell you, at the very, very tip top of the site, there's what's called Flipboard. I love Flipboard. If you're not on Flipboard, it's a phenomenal social media. Actually, it's one of the best. And I got a magazine on there. If you just click that, and there's a magazine on there that says the robots are coming. How do we prepare for this? And then I'll tell you the other question later. Go ahead.
Well, here's the deal. So we know that this automation is displacing workers. It's called the fourth industrial revolution. But here's the thing. Just last year, in 2016, the World Economic Forum, they released a survey called The Future of Jobs. And they said by 2020, just five years from now, you know, as they were reporting, they said over one third of the skills that are considered important in today's workforce will have changed. So what we said at the start was, what can humans do that robots cannot? It's that we can learn from our environment. We can display care and creativity. So if you look at the future of jobs, in the top 10 skills in 2020, let me give you number one, complex problem solving. Number two, they list critical thinking. Number three, creativity. Four, people management. Number five, coordinating with others. And if you look back at their survey in 2015, those were not in the same order. And so what it's showing us is that we have got to focus on our humanity and make sure that we're training up our present workforce and certainly our young people to be able to succeed in these areas.
Without giving the robots too much power.
Well,
yes.
Because if we do that, according to all these articles and experts and stories we're reading, ladies, if we do that, we're screwed as a species.
Well, we have to be smart enough to control the technology and not have the technology control us. So I think the jobs of the future, just to recap what she said, is there will be a huge technology field that will be maintaining and taking care of these operating systems and these robotics. So you have to look toward the future as a technological boom. And there will be a lot of things that will be e-marketing. There'll be a lot of one-on-one kind of care for seniors. We'll try to keep them in their house and have like a residential assistant program where they'll have health and hygiene and transportation and meal prep and things like that. So these are jobs we don't have right now, or we have very little of, but I think that will blossom in time. There are also jobs that will be a sharing economy. We've already started that with Uber and Airbnb. You'll have something on Craigslist, who wants to use my power tools? I mean, you know, there could be all kinds of different services. It'll be a service type economy, and it'll be things that robots can't do. So you have to kind of think that way. There'll be also a tremendous opportunity for coaching and for psychological coaches. Educational tutors will blossom. I told you this the other day on another podcast, Malcolm, that I don't think our school system or our educational system will survive the model that it is right now. I think there will be online learning, and I think there will be educational tutors, athletic trainers, love counselors. Oh, Dr. Andrea will have a job. motivational speakers. So you'll be employed, Malcolm, forever.
Motivational speakers. Yeah, the robots can't talk like we do. They don't have the vision of creativity, Andrea.
They can't mimic. I don't think they can mimic passion.
And I got lots of passion, girl. You ain't gonna replace that.
And then there's other stuff too. I mean, I can go on. There's like, you know, stewards, people that that sit down and work with people that, you know, to manage their wealth or to do different staff roles, like, you know, executive assistants or house managers, event coordinators. Those are things that need a lot of human interaction. Chefs, people that do massage, personal trainers, tutors for children, pet care.
So there's jobs that you really need to look at, is what you're saying, that are going to require yes. human contact specifically.
Exactly.
Yeah. Exactly.
And that's the key to that program. And what about
nursing. Nursing. Don't forget about that.
I have an idea as well that I think is fascinating. What do you think about robots taking over the government?
Well, I kind of think that happens right now. I think we're just utilizing the information, but we're utilizing technology to make decisions. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of risk assessment and things like that that yeah. are already being done militarily. So I think we are very close to having droids on the battlefield. I really do. There's already prototypes, and I think we're almost there.
Well, we are. They're using we know the bad cats are using the drones as well to drop things that are not pleasant on people and stuff. That's happening.
Right.
That's happening. They're doing more than just delivering Domino's pizza at this point, you know? I mean, they're carrying, you know, other things, warfare and stuff like that. But I'm just thinking that would solve our Republican-Democrat problem in our country if the robots could take over the government, you know? And if they did what we told them to do, right? That would be kind of interesting. There could be a whole new generation of politicians listening to Americans. Wouldn't that be cool, ladies?
That would be.
What a concept.
And what do you think about driverless cars? Would you be willing to try those?
I'm not on board yet with that. But all the data that I've read, though, it expresses how much safer it is.
They say.
So I guess if you really read the data and understand, I mean, I guess it is safer, a lot safer than human beings who are texting while driving.
Exactly. I mean, because these cars could literally have eyes in the back of their heads, which we don't. They have sensors all around that can sense incoming threats. I still don't want to be in one. I'm not yet ready for that. But I think it is going to develop to a point where it's a much safer technology.
Okay. And then finally, in our last few minutes, the other big question that everybody out there really wants to know is, again, with the robot revolution coming as it is, what about the stories with the lack of intimacy and the lack of relationships, the people-to-people contact you talk about, Andrea? So how does that work in comparison to, I mean, there's some pretty, you go Google this and see, but there are some pretty strong reports about the fact that this is not a theory, that it's happening and going to happen, that relationships with robots, it's not going to be that plastic rubber doll that you thought daddy had in bed last night. I mean, these are actual robots that can come in the room and slap you upside the head and give you sex and then slap you more if you want. They can do all the nice things you want to have done to you, I guess. I don't know. What do you think about that, Andrea? Is that happening?
Well, we're seeing it, sure, and we've even seen how it's led to some addiction and some, you know, social anxiety problems. I don't think it's going to become as pervasive as the magazines, journal articles, and TV shows would make us think, because we are still wired. And, you know, Ava, you were pointing this out, that whole drive for procreation. Well, we are wired for connection, and the way that we connect with a robot is not the way you connect with another human being. So sure, there will be people who opt for it because it's easier to deal with a robot than have to deal with an emotional, moody woman. I'm talking about myself here. But it won't be so pervasive in everyone, because we're still wired for connection. We like human interaction. We like the unpredictable nature of being able to look in our beloved's eyes and see that twinkle.
There is so something about looking into a woman's eyes. I have to give that to you, man. You cannot replace that with any piece of machine that I can tell. And it's at that moment that is just magical. I mean, that, you know, that is the foundation of a relationship.
Yeah.
Of what that means. So I guess I'm just a hopeless romantic here to some degree, you know, I guess to a big degree for me. But, you know, I got to share the one last question of the show, and you guys are going to trip out there when I tell it to you. And this is not my question, by the way. This is a question from our producers, which are Beverly Butler and Linus Woods Mullins, who they come up with this question. And brace yourself. It's I'll throw this at you, ladies. If robots and humans start having sex, could this open the door to robots raping women?
Oh, God. Mm. No.
Now we're suggesting because, they have feelings and everything. I mean, I don't get that.
No, they don't have well, there's no signs that show that they have feelings, that they can process emotions, nor would they have a drive unless someone programmed them to, nor would they have a drive to obtain someone's body for some sort of pleasure. They're not wired that way. They're, you know, at least at this point.
Well, the there is one thing that kind of freaks me out that I read about. It's called a brain chip. Have you read about that? It's a software company.
Right.
And they've developed software that is a neuron processor. It works like the human brain. And this is technology that's already being used to monitor surveillance at casinos for counting cards and visual inspection on building machinery like aircraft. So things that are very technical and, you know, tiny. But this is an actual development.
Well, where do they put this chip?
Well, the technology, what it does is it takes audio or visual inputs and it converts that to an electrical impulse that algorithms can interpret and use. So right now they're in like cameras, or they're mounted, you know, in units, but it's called BrainChip, the name of the company. And so I'm thinking, oh my goodness, you know, they could do like a hybrid, you know, make a human being. I mean, this is again out of sci-fi movie, but they could do like enhance Malcolm, you know, and make him into something, you know, different or bigger or better or whatever.
Are you saying I need enhancement? Is that what you're
no,
saying?
No.
I think I've just been dissed here from the lovely Ava Armstrong. And I have to, and I also have to tell you that this whole business of the, what you're speaking about, this company, Ava, is this. Now, if they could develop a chip that we could put into the women who are cold and callous to have more relationships or more frequent orgasms in relationships too. And on that note,
boy.
Andrea Pennington, Ava Armstrong, Malcolm Out Loud, to be continued.